Beautiful. Right. Welcome, Lewis. Thanks for coming on and having a chat today. For those who don't know him, Lewis is the first team rugby coach at John Fisher, Key Stage 5 coordinator there. Also doing some online speed work with myself. Pretty handy rugby player. Just got to see him play at the Bury Sevens at the Wooden Spoons team. So thanks for coming on, mate.
No worries. Thanks for having me. And thanks for all the speed stuff you've been doing. It's really helped on the pitch.
Good.
Especially at my age.
And so how old are you now?
I'll be 30 in January, so getting on a bit now.
Nice.
Still trying to run around the younger players.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I'm 33 now and obviously transitioning sports this year. You do notice the difference in some of the ages. Like, more than anything, it's the enthusiasm. They've not got the experience just to step off when you need to.
Yeah, you find as you get older, you change how you play. You're not that naive to think you can. You think you're invincible. Put it that way. You're not invincible.
And a couple of big injuries like makes you really understand that. Like, that was a story of my career, injury through high velocity collision.
Human body's not designed to play rugby or play sport by that fact, I think. Oh, my opinion anyway. But I
Yeah.
still do it. I still love it. So.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And it's quite cool. Like, obviously, you had a 15s game this weekend, but been playing a lot of sevens. And how have you found it all?
Do you know what? I've been asked this question all week by teammates, just friends and family. How have you found the transition from the Super 7 series back to all international rugby with Cyprus? And I thought I was going to be flagging and needing a new set of lungs or just not was really going to adapt well. But I found it really, I don't want to sound arrogant, quite easy. I didn't feel tired. I felt fit. I only played 60 minutes, and the game itself wasn't easy. The game was hard, the game was physical, but the fitness aspect of the game I found quite easy to adapt to. Spacings, timings, etc., is obviously slightly different to sevens, but that will come back very quickly and very naturally after a week in camp and then playing on the Friday night. I think a lot of other players were worrying about the same thing. Some players hadn't played at all for 18 months. So there's a good balance of different adaptations in that game.
Because you were, like you said, we were just talking before, you were playing for Cyprus, you were meant to play against Belgium because of COVID, you had to rearrange opposition a couple of times, right?
Fair play to Eton Manor for stepping in, and they were class. They had a big pack. The score line doesn't reflect how they played. They played really well. And then it was weren't until that the last sort of 20 or so minutes or the last half where the game just opened up a bit more. And we got a couple of good decisions going our way, and then a couple of good line breaks that led to tries, and then ended up wrapping up the game quite easily, or quite well, sorry, not easily. And they didn't really have an answer. And two monster forward packs going at it. It's a credit to both the packs. I wouldn't like to be one of them on the Saturday or the Sunday morning. They're probably aching a lot more than me being in the outside backs.
No, for sure. You make a really good point, like how a lot of, especially with COVID and everything, a lot of athletes have not played in 18 months. And there was a bit, was there a little bit of rugby some point last year, but nothing came off really.
Yeah, it was in May. I think there was some sort of fixtures going ahead. I didn't actually play in that.
It was like a new National League competition or something, wasn't it?
Some sort of cup thing. I know a few boys did. A few boys were quite skeptical of COVID, which is fair enough. And I wouldn't knock anyone for saying that I don't want to play. I'm a bit worried about getting COVID or work. I've been a bit anal about us getting COVID, threatening to pay and whatever, because I've heard workplaces doing that. So fair play to them. I was preparing for sevens anyway. And I didn't have a club, and I still don't have a club at the moment. And I think you can see a lot of players are eager to play, but they're also worried about injuries. That there's a lot of prep going into. I think the coaches and the better coaches are worrying about injuries and contact injuries, and the players look after themselves and manage their bodies.
Yeah,
which is something I still don't do particularly well, but I am starting to do. They're the ones that are going to really thrive off the new season, and they're the ones that are going to really push on and last a lot more games than some others. Some others haven't conditioned their bodies well. And without that, I think they're just going to get quite badly injured, particularly playing on 4G pitches, which is a pet hate of mine. I know people love them and hate them. I just think the injury counts them says a thousand words. Forgive me, anyone that loves them. I'm not here to start an argument with anyone about them, but I think you've got to condition your body and invest in someone like yourself, or invest in an S&C coach, or invest in a good physio. I mean, one thing I've done since the first lockdown is get a good team around me. So I have Matt Lamming from London Irish, who's a fantastic S&C coach. He's looked after me for God knows how long. He probably hates the sight of my texts on his phone by now.
Yeah,
I've had Callum Ross, who's worked with London Irish for a long time in England now. He's looked after me, and as he calls it, gives me an MOT every so often, or gives me some WD-40 and puts me back on the pitch every week at the moment.
Yeah.
But I'd invest in it if you're going to be serious about it, especially playing in the national leagues, because it is such a tough level. And I think a lot of younger guys, they're good players, but they're good in the league, but they don't realise that physical step up, especially if they're coming in from school rugby or if they're coming in from university rugby, where it's quick, but it's not as physical. And they don't realise the national leagues is a bit slower, but it's physical. You either have big guys with a lot of skill, a lot of pace, a lot of power, or you've got big guys that will run over the literally run over the top of you. And I can remember very clearly one of my first games at Ealing, playing against Bridge End at Ealing. Close game, we eventually won. It was 26-24 in the end, and it was kind of a big baptism of fire with the physicality. And there's a big wake-up where I remember that was probably the one time I can remember getting absolutely mowed down by a number eight, and sort of luckily made a bit of a speed bump tackle. But I was sitting up from that thinking, oh, that's the step up from the physicality. That's where I need to get to, sort of thing.
Yeah. And it's always it's been a weird one in terms of, I think now with the internet and social media, and obviously you spoke to some other good coaches that you work with there, like the accessibility to having, you know, good level provision around you is so much better. I remember when I first started coaching people remotely, like via email, it was an absolute nightmare. And now it's just such an easy facility to have.
You're an app, you've cracked it.
yeah. And so like that, I mean, the big thing for me was when I broke my leg when I was 19, and then I knew I had to, you know, you have to do things differently every time. Once you get a big injury, then you're, and your plan B always now. And like because training twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, to perform at the level of the expectation of the national leagues, for example, it's not enough fundamentally. And we know guys that ones that just always break down the same time of the season, and it's like all it takes is just a small little bit of extra investment, changing the way that you train, because that's where social media is a bit of a fucking issue as well, and because there's no context to anything. And I think what's quite interesting is that obviously you're a coach as well, being in a leadership role with Cyprus. Which, and I know quite a few, because that's the tier two national, international programs. Like, that's where, you know, the standard there is high, the intensity is high, it's international rugby. And also, we got to pay respect to the mindset of the person there. You know, a lot of the coaches and stuff that I work with and athletes, it's like, you got to make the big time where you are. So, your mindset, you know, you could be playing in your mind against 100,000 people watching you. And So as a coach, you know, working with those younger players, sixth form players, like, do you see any conflict in the way that you prepare yourself, or are you imparting knowledge to those younger guys as they're coming through? How does that work for you?
I'm quite funny as a coach. I try and the less my players know about me, the better. Yeah. And it's about them. It's not about me. And I'm there for them. I try and take myself out of that context. So when I'm learning, or when they're learning, then when they might not understand something, there's a fault correction. I try and put myself in their shoes. So not necessarily rugby. I'll put myself into PE context at school. So I put myself in a rugby context, trying to learn how to kick or drop kick with a younger player, maybe. They can't quite do it. I'll do it off my left leg to sort of feel how they feel, or see what might be going wrong. And generally, it's just a mechanical fault, or generally, it's just a process fault. And they're thinking of it from their right leg, the mechanics of that, not from their left leg. And it changes slightly because it's awkward. It doesn't feel natural.
Mm.
So I'll do that. But in regards to preparation for playing, no, I'll suggest things, but I think everything is different for everyone, really. What might work for me might not work for the sixth formers.
Mm-hmm.
As what you alluded to, everything they read on social media, I try to get them to not believe it.
Yeah.
They're going to believe it. They go and use the S&C coach at school, or they go and use someone like yourself, or they go and use someone that's got the credentials, not just a random post on Instagram or Facebook or what have you.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those, as you well know, are just myths, and just to get people to get a little like and inflate someone's ego, so to speak. It's not actually, there's no science behind it, or there's no physical or measurable evidence behind it. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. And when did you start coaching? And what led you into coaching? So obviously, you know, you're a handy rugby player and stuff. Did it fall quite naturally, or is it something that...
We're going to go quite deep into this now. I had quite bad injuries when I was, 25, 26. Quite bad back injury. So I was advised to stop playing for a little while and do some rehab, which I absolutely hated because it was quite abrupt and I didn't know what to do with myself. I found I had all this free time and I'm used to training, I'm used to playing, I'm used to seeing my mates. But then a good friend of mine was a coach at the RFU and he headed up one of the county programs. I'm trying not to give too much context to give away who it is. He'll know who I'm on about, but I'm going to be very complimentary towards him. And he's been a coach mentor for God knows how long now. I did work experience when I was at school, and sort of that friendship has grown. And he's come to the county program. Reluctantly, I've gone in and thought, I don't really want to do this. I want to still play.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed that you see the boys go through to the next stage, to the divisional. You see them really learning and really taking on board what you say, because you've played in X League or you've played in whatever. Yeah. They really take on board what you're saying. They want to be there. That's the main difference. They want to be there. It's not just like a club rugby where Johnny's gone because of his mates. It's they're in the council because they've been selected and they want to be there.
Yeah.
So that's how I got involved in the coaching. And then for that next couple of years, it sort of went like that very quickly. So I ended up in the DPP program with London Irish, which was really enjoyable. And getting to watch those boys in the festival days and play against other premiership clubs was fantastic. And then I went into the divisional camp, and that was another big step up, seeing all the coaches that used to coach me in that camp.
Yeah.
With them on the other side of the fence is very, you get to put two and two together why things happened when you were there. But again, what an enjoyable experience that's been. And still is. You get to go to the National Selection Day, talk to the England select about players you've coached, and then you see them put on an England shirt, and that is very rewarding in itself. And the boys are so polite and thankful about it. And that's when just really opened my eyes that actually I'm transitioning. It's going to be quite natural. Before I even knew I was going to go back and play. And then I ended up with John Fisher. Fisher boys are different. we'll leave that at that. They're really good boys. I've loved the school since I've been there. I've loved the rugby program side of things. I think it is going to be a very good program again soon. And it's quite a nice balance at the moment, playing and coaching and teaching.
Mm.
The way I coach has sort of transitioned over to the way I teach now. Yeah. And I'm sort of one of those guys that believes there's a firm difference between teaching and coaching.
Yeah.
They overlap each other.
Yeah.
And I think coaching is actually more advanced than what teaching is, particularly doing my advanced coaching qualification at the moment.
Yeah.
And you get to... You see the learning theories behind it, and you do like your teaching CPD days, and you sit there and think, God, coaching is so much more advanced.
Yeah, and yeah.
One thing that I didn't quite realize until I did my first day on my advanced coach, I'm very self-reflective myself, and I install that into my players because the questions are asked. It's not necessarily an open-ended question, me misleading them to an answer. It's more so that just getting them to reflect and learn that one. It's more powerful, and I didn't actually realize that I do that until someone alluded to it. You do that because that's what you're like as a person.
Yeah.
I sort of looked at him, and then that's why I get the awkwardness all of a sudden, because one of them classic Flinny question, what did you see there? And the players automatically think, oh God, what have I done? And it's not necessarily that. It's more, okay, I'm up in a stand. I can see something different. You're face on to whatever pitch is in front of you, the defence, what did you see? It's not a yes or no. It's not a right or wrong. It's, I just want to know what you saw and why you did what you did.
Mm.
I can see what's going through your head. And they're like, oh, and it's taken a little while, and the Fisher boys now get that. And I'll ask the question, they'll tell me, and they know the next question coming is going to be, what would you do in that situation again? And I really don't mind if they say they're going to throw in out the backdoor one-handed offload. Okay, cool. If it scores a try, well done. If it doesn't, maybe think about what time of the game it is, or maybe think about the score, maybe think about where you are on the pitch, or something like that. And again, they're learning because they're learning from different situations in the pitch, and that will stick in their head because they'll think, actually, it's a close game. I'm not going to throw that pass. I'm just going to keep on the ball, take it into contact. We'll win the ball back and we'll play from there. I don't know if that makes sense at all.
Yeah, no, it does. It really, really does. Like, you think some of the best coaches started as teachers, and like I think what you're sort of saying and talking about there is like how taking that information and then actually transporting that into that individual to appreciate context and time and all of that is just like it's really powerful stuff. And I've from some of the environments I've been in, if you see the player transition to the coach because the player's got nothing left to do but wants to coach, but then really isn't a coach.
Some of them, they just want to hang around the club for a little longer.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, that's when you know you spend too long in meetings, you over plan, there's sideline control, there's all those sorts of things. And I think coaching, teaching, you know, if you can coach rugby, you can coach tennis. You know, those skills are just so vast across everything. And I think some of the best players in teams will never make great coaches, because what made them the best player is their insular nature. But then also some of the great players can be amazing coaches because of the way that they think about playing, like, and their journey. So popular example, like Gareth Southgate was an England international, a very good player to play for England, and now is leading a very, very good England football team. And it's because the way he thinks and the way he played, he wasn't a Shearer or whatever, but he was a top level pro, and by all sounds of it, a fantastic coach that allows players to think for themselves.
Definitely. If you listen to the High Performance podcast.
Yeah. Love that.
I love that. We'll listen to it religiously. Yeah. Here's one just about the culture and the processes. It is amazing. If anyone's listening, I'd recommend it.
Yeah, no, it's good. And you can apply all those stuff into like your micro environments as well. Like with my speed group, it's the only real group coaching that I do at the moment. And sometimes we had about 8 or 9 in the off season, where you've got a couple of England internationals and you've got guys that are playing at level 8 or level 9, all in the same place. And when you take it, like if you think of these people all coming in from obviously training at England camp a week before versus, you know, training down at Beaconsfield on the grass there. Yeah. Their environmental, their sort of preface coming into this group is very, very different. It's very, very different. But as soon as they come onto the track, they're identical because they're all at the same learning point.
So and it's do you find you coach an England international differently to coach a level 8, or do you coach them all the same?
Exactly the same. And it's what's quite funny is that a lot of the guys that have been with me for the longest periods of time, we create co-coaches in the environment because like when we go through that reflecting process, we ask exactly the same questions. What do you see? What do you see here with this technical model? What are we trying to find? And like, they do think, at the beginning, I don't know. I said, well, come on. Like, we see things very differently. So let's figure out somewhere in between so we can work. And then you've got my guys that, you know, don't play pro, actually coaching the England international on some of his wall drills and stuff like that, and the Prem guys, and so humble and open to it. And because their common goal is the same. And what's quite interesting is when sometimes you do get some of the part-time players that don't know that, like I had one guy ask another guy who he played for. And then also it's the other way around. It's like my part-time guys, because they move well, they train well, they're fast and stuff. They think, they're like, who the fuck does he play for?
Yeah.
He plays for beer money on the weekend. No, fair fucks. You know, because it completely normalizes the environment, doesn't it? And that's when real coaching can happen, when you take away, you know, you put everyone in normal playing clothes. They're just normal people.
Yeah, no, exactly. Everyone's human at the end of the day. But one thing I can't stand is the old sofa coaches on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
They love a rant. And then you just think, guys, they're only human. Come on. But could you do the same job as that? Probably not, because you haven't been in that environment.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, even in the, you know, the part-time and the pro ranks, it doesn't matter because it's all relative. Everyone's not trying to make a mistake. Everyone's trying to do the best thing and think as fast as possible. Like, and that's really difficult. I've transitioned. I'm playing American football now, and I'm playing at tight end. I got my first game this weekend. And I mainly did it because obviously the amount of American footballers I've worked with recently, they kind of like inspired me to have a go. And also just a new challenge, 33, you know, I've played the highest rugby I'm going to play. Let's try something different and just keep learning something new. And like, when you talk about having to think fast, oh my Christ, like it makes rugby look like the simplest game on earth. Like you've got, because, and this is what's crazy about it. Like you think about like, the only position, you know, you got your 9 and your fly half. They're the only two positions I could think about really understanding the pitch, because as an American football player, you have to look at the pitch, especially at tight end. You have to look at the pitch, anything behind the line of scrimmage. You kind of got to look at it to either 6 or 9 quadrants.
Right.
Because you have to play laterally, but also with depth. So you imagine like a 9 running towards a breakdown. He's scanning corners and where, and the 10 is playing across the line. But you flip that as a quarterback, he's got to read all these zones like really quick based on passing routes. And I'm just there like on training on the weekend. And this is what I love learning, like I had to run like a, what's called a deep out. So you had to break on the end line of scrimmage, get behind the first linebacker and then cut out. So it's a hard speed cut to the wing. So it's like 10 yards, then cut. And it was like, I was in acres of space, right? I managed to break free, get separation. I was in acres of space. And because I didn't really understand, I was like, oh, fuck, I've done something wrong. They reversed the call or something like that, but they hadn't. Yeah. And it's just that process of like really just like being a beginner with every level of challenge that you're taking. And yeah, it's just that, that great experience. And once you learn and then you take that back to coaching, it was really, really nice. Like people there don't really know what I do for a job. Because every rugby club I've gone to, they know where I've coached and da 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 da. And it's like, oh, can you help with this? Can you help with that? No, I just want to be a player. Leave me alone, right? So, like, some people think I'm an accountant. Some people think I'm this, I'm that. And just, like, so I can just get on and learn and just be the novice, not the performance coach.
Your own story.
Yeah. So, and it's what's really cool is I kind of get to relive the process that a lot of like guys that come in and coach by me have to go through, that whole relearning new ways of training, new methodologies, new positions. Like, I did my first scrimmage and shit the bed.
It's almost make you appreciate how like a novice to someone that's new to the speed stuff that might be relatively quick, but his mechanics are awful. Does it make you appreciate that learning process they'll go through?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because like I, you know, with what I do, like trained a long time, relatively quick, relatively powerful, but in certain situations, absolutely useless because my technique was so poor. Like with all the hand fighting and stuff like that, like I went, went to block some guy and he just swung me and I was in the middle of nothing. And it's like, and that's exactly the same with like that guy that's fast but can't refine it.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, for me, in terms of my, obviously I'll never play sport forever, but I'll coach for a lot longer, being able to transition sport, start this learning task again, reinvent myself as well in the process. It's just like, it's just a really nice thing to be able to do.
I suppose it makes you appreciate playing a lot more, or those playing days a lot more. When I was out for that lengthy period, when I went back to it, I kind of ended up, this was just before the first lockdown, I kind of ended up hating rugby. I'm back and I couldn't play how I used to play, and I didn't realise how long it would take to for that to happen. I probably wasn't going to play. To be honest with you, and that's just with the trip, like I said, you get that group around you, and it was motivation from other people that motivated me to play again. And then a massive, massive point I had to prove to myself, which was like a burning desire. I won't go into that because it's an entirely different story.
We've all got stuff in the basement, mate, don't worry.
But then going back to the sevens this year, it feels like I've proved that point now, and now I'm sort of sitting here thinking, okay, I've got Bournemouth Sevens coming up. What's my next challenge?
Yeah.
Is it go and be a player coach somewhere? Is it go and go back to, I don't know, we used Henley as an example. We both played there. Go back to Henley and do another season in the National Leagues. Is it go and join a CrossFit club? Is it go and join BJJ? Is it go and continue to refine water skiing? Something different that I can learn, but then I can still coach the rugby, or I can still coach something else. It's that new challenge, that new pathway, if you like.
Like
you're never going to play forever, unfortunately. No. Just how it is.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, obviously with the Super Series and stuff, like it's only going to be a couple more sort of years, and that thing's just going to fucking do damage, isn't it? It's so well run, and some of the players that are there are just...
Oh, this year, you take Semi, for example.
Yeah.
I was trying not to mention him because that's all I get at the moment. Any rugby club go to, how is it playing with Semi?
Yeah.
You get players like that that want to come and play for the fun or the love of the game. or you've got some of the best players in the country playing in the sevens team, so you could talk about guys, some of the guys that play for Samurai. They are amazing. You get those guys coming and play, and then you've got 21 teams now. It never used to be that big. I don't remember ever being that big. Teams, you've got guest teams, it's up and down the country in different places. And the game itself, I think, like every tournament, you're probably going to have different coaches there approaching players at the end of the games or the end of the tournament. Oh, why don't you come and play for us, sort of thing? And that's how rugby's just going to go like that.
Yeah. Especially sevens.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that because I don't see, and maybe someone's thought of the idea already or not thought of the idea, I don't see why there isn't a pathway to play sevens all year round. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean we play sevens in the winter because it's cold and wet and no one likes that, especially us outside backs. But why isn't there like one tournament in September, one in October to keep you ticking, then November, December, January, February, you're off, then back to it in March maybe? I don't know.
That well, there's plenty of indoor 4Gs.
There is.
And but no, you're right. Like I, you know, I was going to bring my... my speed gates down to the tournaments and just run people and just get people focusing on that type of stuff, just because it, you just see the potential there. Now, obviously a guy that I work with, James Tyus, is a pro view. He like is an analyst for sevens teams now.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is not going away. And I never really, when I played, I couldn't play a 15 season and then do a seven season. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do back-to-back. So I stayed with 15s. But now if I was a player, like I would be more inclined to be prepping for sevens. And do you know what? Fucking going down to Redruth in January and literally do one.
Down the hellfire corner, no thank you. I'd rather go and play wherever.
yeah. And yeah, it's just fascinating that, you know, it may be a case, you know, for you, like building that, going back and having fun and loving it and enjoying it, because it can burn you out. It takes a lot from you. And especially when you've got like some coaches on the sideline just berating you because you didn't do something right. You're only trying your hardest. Mm. You're never trying to make the mistake. And that's where it's really interesting. There is that huge disconnect, and that's why I really struggled with some of the clubs to when I stopped. I basically stopped playing because I tore my pec in a contact drill in training. And I was like, well, pec, anterior labral damage, bicep tear, on a Tuesday night, and I was like, this is ridiculous, the worst thing I've ever seen in coaching before. And and there's that huge disconnect from appreciating like how the elite level operate and how elite operators work, and the best juice that you get out of anyone is to ensure that they've got a bit of freedom, a bit of ownership, and they enjoy what they're doing. And no one likes doing contact on a Tuesday night.
There's a couple of people I keep speaking to at the moment, and they keep saying, when you stop enjoying it, that's when you know.
Yeah.
You can guess what they're talking about, me stopping playing. And as soon as I stop enjoying it, I'm just going to go, nope, I'm not doing it.
And I think it happens, like, you'll know. When I did this, I was like, that's it. I don't think I'll play. Like, I'm not coming back. I know my season's over, let alone getting surgery or whatever. And I was just like, this is not worth it.
It drains you physically and mentally. And I think another thing that's going to take off soon is sports psychology. I can see it being very apparent and coming out of lockdowns and stuff, very apparent in amateur sports. You know, like S&C when it first literally went bang like that, like a big explosion.
Yeah.
I can see amateur clubs saying, oh, we want a sports psychology intern from X university, and they've got that.
Yeah, doing a few
counseling role. Players that are either dealing with, I don't know, issues off the pitch, or they're dealing with being dropped, or those sort of issues that revolve around sport.
Massively.
People don't necessarily see. They see all the good stuff. Mm. So see me post on Instagram all the stuff about Marauders or stuff about Cyprus or whatever I'm doing with my mates or misses or whatever. But they don't see me getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, dragging myself to the gym on days where I'm absolutely broken and battered and think, I really don't want to squat at the moment, or I really don't want to bench press at the moment. They don't see that, or they don't see me doing one of your horrible sessions that you put me through. I'm dripping with sweat. I'm walking through the athletics track, and people will say, "You okay? It's a bit tired." That go-to person to talk to, and it also gives the sports psychologists something to like a way into sport, sort of thing.
I'm very open. Like I've got my own therapist. I'm a massive believer in all of it, and there is that, and that's where I'm trying to get trying to come up with a term for it. I was speaking to someone about it the other day, because there's a subculture of sort of players that just play for fun, and then there's a subculture, the ones that don't even necessarily get contracts at clubs or whatever, forget the money, but there is a subculture below full time that operate at a very high level, take it very seriously, invest 10, 15 years of their life to it, that need that extra level of attention, that extra level of care, because that is their pro career. That is what they identify with. That is what makes them tick. And you know, I'm very fortunate that now, out of full time club coaching, I can help a massive spectrum of guys.
It's almost like to me, I don't know if you'll agree with this, or people might not agree with this, but I'll say it anyway, because I'll say what I think anyway. That's why me and you get on quite well, because we're very similar. rugby's pro or amateur. The guys that are asking, they're semi-pro. Unfortunately, guys, you're not. You're being paid to play an amateur sport, because rugby is still amateur. It hasn't exploded like football. Now, if it was football, that subculture of guys in the middle, you were saying, they're the part-time players. They're your conference, your league. I don't know if League Two is full-time or part-time. Not that savvy with football. But anyway, those sort of level players, they're the semi-pro. As a footballer, but they do this as a job as well.
Yeah.
Or you take your Tyrrells players, for example, women's 15s, how they do what they do and play at that level and play internationally, and some of them, or all of them, I don't quite know if some of them are full-time or not. Again, I don't have that knowledge. If I've offended anyone, I don't mean to. How they do it is beyond me, and hats off to every single one of them that have jobs and train, and then they rock up for a Saracens, or they rock up for a Harlequins on a Sunday, on a Saturday, or they play for England, they play their heart out, and then they have to go to work again.
Yeah. But
how they do that, to me, there needs to be something done there as well. I think it's the England women's players are paid to play or contracted, I think. But I think the whole league, something needs to be done there, because what they sacrifice is similar to a national one player. A national one, again, certainly needs to be done there. Half the championship, for crying out loud, needs to have that funding and have those players compensated well, because they give up their entire lives pretty much to play for London Scottish, to play for Richmond, etc. Some of them do it, like you said, for the love, but some of them do it because they want to keep going up and up and up.
Yeah.
Fair play to both players. And then there's the players that do it for the love, like your community players, but they might not necessarily want to go up, but they're good players, they want to play because they love it, but their career is law, their career is teaching, for example. I'm glad you said that, because I totally agree with you, but there is that fine middle gap that in rugby particularly, not necessarily other sports, that needs to, I don't know, be done, or some sort of restructure or whatever. Or it might be funded, because it's not commercialised enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen a decent rugby PlayStation game for God knows how long. There's something Rugby 08 was the best one. You got Jason Robinson and ran round everyone.
That's brilliant. Well, listen, that's pretty much all we got time for, but that's thank you very much. I really appreciate you coming on and having a chat.
Been enjoyable. We'll do it again.
Absolutely. And it's just really good for, I get a lot of coaches that S&C coach and stuff, but it's just really good to get as a more diverse guy on the call, a player, a coach, a good story, a good chat, and some really good insight. So thank you very much, man.
Well, pencil one in for January when I've been coaching a bit and Fish is back up and running, playing fixtures. Hopefully the county and division will be back up and we'll leave the player aside and we'll go full coaching.
Yeah, love it. Cool. All right, I'll just close off everything and just stay on the line for me, all right? Thank you very much. Cheers, mate.
No worries.